action. Hey there, movie kings and queens. Welcome to episode 56 of the Real Game Movie Show. I'm your host, Mike Lovin, and with me, as always, my marvelous co-host, Ryan Provost.
Howdy, Mike.
How you doing, Ryan?
Oh, just fantastic. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Wonderful.
Wonderful indeed. To start us off,
yes.
Let's get into some dirt here about Steven Spielberg and Netflix and the Oscars.
Sure.
So he's been making some waves in the movie world.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Here's the thing. So a report came out that Steven Spielberg was planning on going to the Oscar governor's meeting in April to address the council and bring up his concerns about Netflix movies and their eligibility for the Oscars and such. Does that sound about right?
Sure. I don't know what he's planning on doing in the future. I just know the comments he's made previously.
So let me tell you what I heard today.
Ooh, what you heard? You got the tea?
Yeah. So
what's the tea?
A report came out today that Jeffrey Katzenberg, who is the K in DreamWorks SKG.
Okay.
He spoke at South by Southwest and said that he had a recent conversation with Spielberg and that Steven Spielberg said that he said none of those things.
Gasp.
Yeah. So apparently a journalist was onto some story about this and they called a spokesperson for Spielberg for a comment and they got what they said twisted.
Okay.
So apparently Spielberg is not going to the Academy in April to address a plan of action. And apparently the comment was from an Amblin spokesperson. And it was more in the lines of saying, Mr. Spielberg would be happy if others took up the cause in April at the Academy Governor's meeting. So that's kind of an interesting twist, which makes me feel like there was some truth to maybe he had expressed concerns to somebody.
I'm less interested in digging into what exactly he said and more interested in the sentiment of what is behind all of this.
Yeah. So I kind of wanted to still talk about that. So he did in 2018 say that once a movie makes its way to TV, it's a TV movie. So his kind of feelings were that if a movie was on Netflix, it should be more eligible for an Emmy than an Oscar.
Okay.
So how do you feel about that?
I disagree.
Okay.
We have shifted how movies are made and distributed quite a bit in the last few years.
Right.
We've even changed how TV and TV shows are created and distributed thanks to streaming services like Netflix, like Hulu, like yeah. Amazon. So to ignore that or to not embrace it as a legitimate form of art perplexes me.
Sure.
Especially coming from Steven Spielberg, I think that it just rings as someone, unfortunately, who's maybe a little past his prime and holding on to the ways of
right
before times.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is
sorry to insult your contemporary.
Well, lovely. I was hearing somebody else kind of talk about this and they were saying, you know, like if you compare Spielberg and George Lucas, like a lot of times people think that they are so similar, but you know, they've collaborated together, but they made a good point with like George Lucas is probably the kind of person where if he were still like creating a movie, if he could create a movie and have it put up on Netflix for all the world to see the next day, he would, you know what I mean? Like,
well, not only him, but a lot of big name filmmakers are doing just that. Steven Soderbergh released a movie directly to Netflix recently.
Ava DuVernay has done that.
Yep. Alfonso Cuarón with Roma. Right. We see it happening. And Martin Scorsese later this year is doing it with The Irishman.
Yep.
So we're going to see this increase. I don't think we're going to see a decrease. Yeah. And I don't think that we can look at these movies differently from other movies.
Well, and I think too, like a lot of these movies, they're being made with the intention of hopefully getting a lot of them. Some of them are made directly for Netflix intentionally, but a lot of these movies are made with the hopes that just somebody will pick them up, whether it be Netflix, Amazon, or, you know, a studio. It's not the same as like Lifetime or something making a TV movie.
Yeah, because I remember, I'm even old enough to remember those truly made for TV movies. They were of a different quality. They were different.
Yeah.
Many of them were miniseries, for example, and not actually fully realized movies. So I do think that we are in a different age.
Yeah.
Does there need to be more definition around what movies would qualify for an awards? I'm not necessarily interested in that conversation. I think there is one to be had to maybe distinguish those. I also think it's not necessarily mutually exclusive to say a movie is either a made for TV movie and can be qualified for an Emmy, or a movie that can be qualified for an Oscar. Why not both? Why couldn't Roma be nominated for both? What's saying they can't, other than maybe the egos of the academies behind both of those awards?
Well, so take Amazon.
No.
Sure.
I want to make all the money.
Yeah, right.
Give me.
So one argument is that Amazon kind of plays by the rules as far as like, so I guess with the Academy rules, it has to spend 7 days consecutive in a commercial theater in LA or New York, must not be broadcast in a non-theatrical format before releasing in LA, and must wait 3 months after its theatrical run to be released on home video or streaming.
See, that all seems very, I don't know, that seems arbitrary, doesn't it?
Maybe, but if Netflix wants to be part of the Oscars, why should the Oscars change how they do things for Netflix when everybody else is playing by these rules? Why shouldn't Netflix have to conform if they want those awards?
Because at some point, Netflix is going to make one of the most watched movies of the year that is also the most critically acclaimed. And what the Oscars is just going to say, no, we're not going to include you, even though one of the most well-known filmmakers hypothetically made this movie that the masses adore.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's going to come a time where the Academy may have to make a decision there. I'm also interested in seeing if this changes the business model of how movies are released for consumption. Like, there are some people who think that movie theaters may someday soon become a thing of the past or more rare because movie theaters are increasingly making less money. I guess that's a weird way of putting that, but they're not making as much money as they used to because people at home are the TVs are becoming so theatrical themselves because of how big and advanced the technology is there that people feel like I can just wait until a movie gets released and watch it.
Well, and on the flip side to that, they're just going to the theater is becoming more and more expensive.
So what do you think the future of movie watching and movie consumption looks like?
I mean, I believe that the home theater experience is ultimately the future. I can understand though, where some filmmakers, and again, this is going to be probably people that are, you know, more ingrained in the past, but wanting to preserve that theater going experience. I know, I think Christopher Nolan has come out and said kind of like he backs the Spielberg way of thinking, but you know, these are also filmmakers who can afford to like put things on 35 millimeter film or 70 millimeter film that, you sure. know, they want to preserve that aspect of movie making too. And, but digital filmmaking is where the world is going and seeing movies at home. Yeah. So
I think in the future there, I would advocate for a shorter time between when a movie is released theatrically and when you can access it on demand.
Yeah.
I think that some studio or some entity is going to wise up to that sooner rather than later and realize, let's leave the movie in the theater for a month, 3 weeks, a more abbreviated amount of time, and then release it on demand, but charge significantly more than a movie on demand currently is released under, and just for rent, not to own.
Right.
And differentiate it that way and still release it to own
later.
Right. Maybe on the same kind of schedule it is now, a couple months later. But
so what does that do for the Netflix model though, then? Because when you're talking about paying to rent, that's like iTunes or Amazon Prime or whatever. But the streaming where you pay a subscription kind of thing.
Well, Netflix will still make its money doing that, but maybe Netflix at some point in the future says, okay, we'll release Roma that you can, we'll release it to people who opt to pay an extra fee
yeah.
earlier, but then it's released to everybody who's in our subscription service on this date, you know? So I could see it definitely going that route. If there's a way to make money off of it, I do think that making movies more accessible at home is going to happen sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Digital streaming, whatever is probably the future. Me selfishly, I want to maintain that movie going experience.
I don't think that'll ever go away, but I think that I already see it becoming more rare. I see more of my friends waiting, especially for movies that aren't the big event movies. I think movies like what we're talking about this week with Captain Marvel and all the Marvel movies, truly, I think there are so many people who still want to go see it opening weekend yeah. in the theater with a group of friends, whatever.
Maybe it comes down to only having one or two movie theaters in a town or something right. instead of having 5, 6, or 7.
I don't even think it's that necessarily. I just think that we're going to see more streaming faster.
Yeah.
I think that the time from theatrical release to streaming will be quicker. I also think there are going to be more things that are released by Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, whatever, yeah. that even immediately on the streaming services.
Well, and I just heard too that so Apple is going to start producing
yeah.
content, and for them it's going to be, they're not going to necessarily charge like a subscription kind of thing. It's going to be, if you own an Apple device that can play the movie, you can see it. They're going to have movies and TV shows and stuff. But so their whole thing is to get people to buy Apple products, whether it's Apple TV or an iPad or whatever.
Well, that's good. That's good. I hope that little startup works out for them. Because I don't know anyone personally who owns an Apple product.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of a niche kind of market.
Yeah. Good for them. Good for them. I like to root for the little guy.
Yeah.
I hope it works out for them.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on this, or should we go ahead and move on to the movie?
You looked at the clock. You're ready to talk Captain Marvel, aren't you?
I'm kind of ready to talk Captain Marvel.
Let's do it then. Let's talk some Captain Marvel.
So here's what I think.
Distant cousin of Captain Crunch.
Yeah. Let's give our quick general thoughts, and then let's go ahead and open it up. I don't want to take too long to get into spoilers, because I feel like it's the kind of movie that you want to really dive into. You know what I mean?
Apparently you do, definitely.
Dive into it.
Oh, I wish you wouldn't talk about a female superhero that vulgar. That's very crass.
I was talking about
especially
the cat.
For a homosexual I don't know. It's gross.
All right. So the movie is Captain Marvel.
It is.
What is this? The 21st movie in the MCU?
Something like that.
Something like that.
I can't keep up.
Yeah. So quick synopsis. Carol Danvers becomes one of the universe's most powerful heroes when Earth is caught in the middle of a galactic war between two alien races. Brie Larson, Samuel L. Jackson, Ben Mendelsohn, Jude Law, Annette Bening, amongst others,
yes,
in the cast. So pretty stacked cast.
Yeah. Do you have a question?
Why don't you take over?
No, I was wondering what your question was.
I'm just announcing facts right now.
Oh, okay. Keep announcing facts.
All right. Domestically, opening weekend made $153 million.
That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. I think it's more than they were expecting, too. Worldwide, $455 million.
That's good.
That is good. It's funny. I saw a... I heard about this tweet that went out. Just somebody on Twitter said, "No superhero movies fail." And Josh Trank, the director of The Last Fantastic Four, replied,
"Ha,
hold my beer."
Oh. You know what? I'm glad he has a sense of humor about that. At least some good came out of that movie. Right. Did you ever watch that movie?
I did.
I didn't make it through the whole thing.
Didn't you?
No, I sure didn't.
I was at the theater. I typically try not to leave. So,
oh no,
yeah.
Oh.
And that was before a movie pass or anything.
Oh no,
I paid full price for that puppy.
Oh, you poor thing.
Yeah.
Everyone donate some Mike's GoFundMe. Venmo him.
Right.
$4. The most fantastic $4 you can
the
send.
The most fantastic $4. Yeah. So this movie was released on International Women's Day. Do you think that was a coincidence?
Oh, absolutely not. No.
That was Friday night. Oh, and that's when Pete and I went and saw it. But yeah, so here's the thing. I really enjoyed this movie. I liked it very much. I kind of felt like it felt a little bit more like a phase one or phase two movie. And, you know, we're in phase three now. But that being said, I highly recommend this movie.
Okay. Yeah. Let me think, what do I want to say for my initial thoughts? I will say this. I was very much looking forward to this movie.
Uh huh.
And I went to see it opening night with a group of people, and I left underwhelmed.
Did you?
I did. And I was very disappointed in that because I was very much looking forward to it. But I felt the first time I saw it that it existed too much to serve the larger Marvel universe, mm-hmm. and not enough to serve the story it was telling.
I can see that.
However, I saw it a second time last night, actually, and I appreciated it more the second time.
Okay.
So I actually even raised my grade that I'm going to give it later, because having seen it the second time and knowing what I was getting into,
yeah,
I was able to appreciate what's good about it a little bit more and look past all of the universe serving aspects of it. I still find it to be about an average, if not below average, Marvel movie, which is still a good movie because right. Marvel has produced really high quality stuff, but it's not, we just had Black Panther nominated for an Academy Award for Best Picture. We had Infinity War be this larger than life movie. We had Marvel has pretty consistently in the last couple of years released amazing movies, like some of their best movies.
Right.
So I found this to be very average.
Here's where I forgive that a little bit. I kind of started thinking about like the other Marvel movies that have come out, and like Captain America, the first Avenger, like that.
Technically she was, well, no, she wasn't before him. He was World War II.
Right.
I'm dumb.
Yeah.
I'm bad at time.
But so that movie to me was kind of meh.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I liked it.
Agreed.
And I like what it built up. And then,
I mean, my favorite Marvel shot of all time is still that chamber
when
opening
it opens up. Oh, dear Lord, fan me. But so look at what Captain America has become since then.
Correct.
So part of me just has that faith then that what we've been introduced to is only going to get better. And for that, I kind of forgive some of the flaws is the right word I'm looking for, but I kind of forgive some of the misgivings of this movie.
Sure. I think this movie would have been more well served had it come out maybe even in phase 1 or phase 2. And then there was a long break before we ever see Captain Marvel again.
Right.
Because truly in the Marvel Universe, there's this long break before we see her again. It goes from the 90s to, I guess, current day.
Well, let's say this had come out in either phase 1 or phase 2, and then we don't even get another hint that she's coming back until the end credit scene of Infinity War, like we got. But then people are a little bit more excited to think, oh, she's coming back.
That's exactly what I'm saying, is I think that would have been a more interesting way to go.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, I agree with that. But
especially like if there's that moment, we'll get to it in spoilers. I don't want to ruin it quite yet.
Yeah.
It's not a super spoilery moment, but I don't know. Someone might bitch about it.
I kind of feel like this movie has a tone that's kind of unlike most of the other Marvel movies.
Really? Because I feel like it has a very consistent tone.
Do you?
Almost formulaic.
Really? Okay. Yes. Well, it felt a little different. Not astronomically different, like it doesn't fit into the MCU or anything like that. It's just we've got a more jovial Nick Fury in this movie, and anyway,
that's it. And that's it.
No, I mean, it kind of has that like 90s action buddy cop kind of feel to it.
I feel like Thor Ragnarok has a very distinct feel.
Right. Yeah.
It goes absolutely in a very comedic, much more kind of slapstick route than most other Marvel movies go. Black Panther has a very unique feel to it. I feel like this was one of my criticisms of this movie would be it feels like a very formulaic, almost paint by numbers Marvel movie.
Okay.
I think the performances elevate it a little bit more than that, but not much more.
You know, I will say there's been a lot of criticism about Brie Larson's performance in general,
specifically from you, because you hate women. I wish you would stop.
You are really painting me into a bad...
I wish you would stop tweeting at her.
Right?
And her family. And her... Leave them out of this.
Listen, I know the Larsons.
You're so rude.
But, okay. But my point is that I feel like some of the criticism going towards Brie Larson, especially, has been kind of unfair. Like, I think that she did a good job for the role that she was given for this movie.
Yeah, she has moments. I don't think her entire performance is the strongest, but there are moments where I see her and I'm like, wow, like, this is a star.
Yeah.
And
I mean, she's an Oscar-winning actress.
Sure.
She is?
She is. Yeah, she's great. Within this movie, there are moments where I look at her, I'm like, you are awesome. And there's moments where I look at her and I'm like, so I think she did well. I am interested to see how she does among this much larger cast,
right,
in Endgame next month, which it is kind of wild to think we saw Captain Marvel this month. We see her in the next movie next month.
Yeah. I mean, there was a similar...
Have we ever had that before where a character played a superhero in a movie 1 month and then was the same character in a movie the next month.
I think the closest would be Black Panther and Infinity War, which is just a couple months apart.
That's true, yeah.
But this is also the shortest amount of time between two Avengers movies. So really there's only been Ant-Man and the Wasp?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the shortest amount of, you know, additional world building too between, obviously, I mean, the way that it ends with such a cliffhanger, you know, it's like, how much more world building can you do in other movies?
Right.
You go back in time to tell a story. That's what
exactly.
You do. Do you think it's too close?
Do I think what is too close to what?
I'm sorry. Captain Marvel and Endgame.
No, but like I said earlier, I think that Captain Marvel would have benefited from coming out a few years ago than having a very obvious absence for years before reappearing in Endgame. Because I can't talk about it because they're spoilers. So I'm going to stop myself. No, I won't. Okay, so this isn't a spoiler, but Nick Fury at the end of Infinity War calls on Captain Marvel, right? So it would have been interesting had we known he had that ability for all this time. Like, let's say the Captain Marvel movie came out, this movie came out years ago.
Right.
5, 6, 7 years ago. And this whole time we're thinking, what's this emergency that Nick Fury is finally going to call Captain Marvel for? And then that moment happens. I think it would have been a much more impactful thing. Whereas I think for a lot of more casual fans, myself included, when that moment happened at the end of Infinity War, I was like, what is this?
What does that mean? Yeah.
I didn't know what that signified. I had to look it up after. And then even when I looked it up, I was like, okay, so who is Captain Marvel? I think it would have been a lot more impactful had Captain Marvel come out years ago and then that moment happens and you're like, oh yeah, this is the moment, this is the time Nick Fury finally has to call upon Captain Marvel to save
the day. I agree with you. I think that would have been a great play for Marvel.
Yeah. And truly a movie featuring a female led superhero movie should have happened 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago anyway. Yeah. So what a time to be
progress.
Alive. Yeah, finally.
Well, let me ask you this.
No, you can't ask me anything.
Okay.
I'm kidding.
Show's over.
Ask away.
Okay. So how do you feel about some of the, I don't know if you've heard any specifics or not, but just the comparison of this movie to Wonder Woman? I feel like this is a movie that will be important for Marvel, and I think will has the potential to do every bit as good as Wonder Woman does.
So in some ways I do think it's a fair comparison, and in some ways I don't. It is a fair comparison in that they're two women and that's it.
Yeah.
And when you don't feature female characters in a genre for a long time, and then you get to within a fairly short amount of time, you are going to compare those things.
Right.
For better or for worse. As far as a superhero goes, I think it's a much more compelling conversation to compare Captain Marvel with, say, Superman, because I think they both have a very similar issue in that they are both supremely powerful in a way that, how do you make them compelling characters on screen? Because towards the end of this movie, no spoilers, but she is so powerful, I wonder, is it going to be too easy for her to swoop in and help in the next Avengers movie?
You know what, and thank you, because you kind of summed up where I was trying to go with the whole, is it fair to compare them? Because they are two female superheroes.
Right. If you're comparing them because of what they mean for female empowerment, sure. But if you're comparing them because you're a nerd like you and I and you're trying to compare their superpowers and how that can be portrayed on screen, I think there's more apt comparisons. Whereas I would compare a Wonder Woman to, say, Thor, in that they're both gods who come from these exotic places and are trying to assimilate into a land that they are, an earth really, that they are very unfamiliar with.
Right.
Those two movies, I think, tonally share more in common than Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel. And I think Captain Marvel and, say, Man of Steel or one of the Superman movies probably share more in common because of the character traits.
No, that's good. That's good. That, I think that helps me out there.
Plus, Thor's hair in Thor is much more comparable, I would say, to Wonder Woman's than to Captain Marvel's.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
All right. Anyway, moving along. The de-aging in this movie for Nick Fury.
Yeah.
Man, they just keep getting better and better with that. The fact that...
I truly didn't notice that at all.
I mean, exactly. And I noticed it a little bit with Clark Gregg, Coulson.
Well, because he looks like shit.
Well, and I, you know, he's not in the movie as much, so I feel like maybe they didn't focus on it.
They
so
used
much.
All their budget on Nick,
right?
On Samuel L. Jackson.
But the fact that Samuel L. Jackson is in the movie, the entire movie.
Well, and they also had to use him on the cat. The cat's dead.
Right. By now. Oh, obviously.
No, even when they filmed it, the cat was dead. It was very much a Weekend at Bernie's situation.
Right. Totally reanimated. But just very impressive.
That cat will be seen next in Pet Cemetery later this month.
That is right.
It's a busy pussy.
It's being typecast. So yeah, anyway, I was very impressed with that.
Yeah, I was too. I did not notice it at all. I wonder, like, does he have to wear anything on his face or anything? You see the, like, behind-the-scenes footage of people having to wear all the stupid balls and shit on their face or in their body when they're playing a digital character. Does he have to wear all that shit, or do they just do it all? I don't know. I've never seen...
That's a good question.
Yeah, do they, like, splatter his face with, like, green paint and say, we will take care of this in post, don't worry?
I'm not sure. I'd be
interested to see, like, exactly how that process goes.
What do you say we just go
and to- I wish that filter existed, you know, for us common folk in just everyday life.
I'm sure there's a filter for it, but I'd like it to be a real life thing.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah
maybe one day.
dreams can come true.
It'll be an episode of Black Mirror.
Is that show still on?
Sure.
Okay. What do you say we go ahead and get into spoilers?
Let's do it.
All right,
let's ruin this movie for people.
Spoilers are now on the table.
Also my wine.
So one of the most endearing things in this movie, and it's just a split second, but that, well, first of all, the Stanley tribute at the beginning of the movie.
I mean, that's not a spoiler, but yeah, that both times choked up.
Yeah.
Truly.
But then when Stanley's actual cameo on the train where he's reading the script for Mallrats.
Yeah.
I had heard that Kevin Smith like started crying during that scene when he saw
Kevin Smith cries during everything. I'm sure.
Well, that's true. But that was just, that was a very sweet moment. He's like, I heard a quote where he said, he goes, now if I'm officially part of the MCU canon, he's like, did I survive the snap?
Oh, good question.
I heard a rumor.
The answer is no.
The answer, no.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely
he not. Didn't. Jay did.
Well, somebody's got to speak for them.
Right.
I'd heard a rumor, though, that Kevin Smith may be the new, like, cameo.
No.
I hope not.
No.
But.
Pass. Hard pass.
Rumors happen.
He probably started that rumor.
He probably did. That's funny.
Okay. Because there's something I feel like one of the criticisms I have of this movie is that I feel like it might be trying to be too much. So I don't know if you got this vibe, but from the very beginning, the very opening scene, I felt like it was very much trying to serve the larger cinematic universe from that opening shot. I don't know if you remember it, but it's just like kind of dust kind of flowing in the wind. Okay. Almost alluding to the end of Avengers Infinity gotcha. War.
I didn't catch that, but...
Yes, that's the very first scene. It's just dust floating in a what looks like a war-like
okay.
place. I was like, oh, is this showing the end? But it wasn't. It was showing her when she acquires her powers in that explosion. But I was like, I thought that really set a tone for... okay, this movie is serving this larger purpose.
Yeah.
And then you get glimpses of that throughout, including in later the post-credits right. scene. And I have an issue with that. But then it also tries to be several other things. It tries to illustrate the war between the Kree and the Skrulls. And then it also is a nostalgia movie about right. the 90s. And then it's also a superhero origin story. And then it's also a female empowerment story.
And a buddy cop.
And then it's also a Nick Fury origin story. And it's also a buddy cop story. I feel like it's trying to be a lot of things.
That's a fair criticism.
And I wish it had a little more focus. I wish it wasn't trying to be all of them. I wish it had only tried to be maybe a couple of them.
Which couple do you think would serve the story best?
Me and Liam Hemsworth.
Okay.
No, sorry. I was thinking out loud.
Sure.
I love the 90s nostalgia factor. Like when I hear the music that they were playing in this movie, I assume that's what you feel like when you see Charlie Chaplin on screen.
Sure, absolutely.
Exactly. It's the exact
more
same
Frank
thing.
Frank Sinatra. I'm not that old.
Right. So, but no, hearing that music made me very happy. I'm a child of the 90s, seeing a blockbuster brought back both very happy and traumatic memories. Because you've gone to a blockbuster and they didn't have the movie you wanted.
Right.
Could you imagine if that were still true? If you went to go like download a movie on demand, but too many people had and you couldn't get it?
That would suck.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And especially if you had to wait 5 minutes to rewind it from the last time someone played it on demand.
Because they didn't rewind it.
See, nostalgia. It's a great thing.
Yeah.
So I love the 90s nostalgia aspect of it. I also think that, I mean, you have to have the women, the female empowerment parts of it. And right. that really did, especially the shot towards the end of her at several different ages getting knocked down and standing back up. Like that hit me.
Yeah, that was good.
As someone who's not a woman, but just a sucker
has
for
been knocked
that.
Down several times.
No, I am a very strong man, as you can tell from the inflection of my voice. But no. I thought that was really cool. And having some Nick Fury origin was cool too. I think the foreshadowing to Avengers was a little too much. I think that could have been pushed that to the side. I think that would have been served better had this movie been made a few years ago and you didn't have to do that. Because you do have to. This movie very much knows it was made after Infinity War, and I think it's serving that purpose a little too much. And I don't know. I think you have to do all the Kree and Skrull stuff. I just think it had to do too much. Yeah. And because of that, it didn't have enough time to build the characters as much as it could have.
So it's another one that, another reason why, had it been done several years ago, that it maybe wouldn't have had to have fit so much in.
Exactly.
Yeah. What did you think about the reason why Nick Fury wears a patch is because that cat scratched him?
Oh, almost my shadiest take. Because he says a line in another Marvel movie.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
Yeah, where he says something along the lines of, I learned years ago not to trust anybody.
Right.
That's, you know.
This is what happens when
this is when it happens when you trust somebody. And then it was a fucking cat.
Yeah.
Really?
So that was one of the things that kind of bothered me about this movie was I did kind of feel like in some ways, because of everything that they were cramming into it, that it felt like a few things maybe got kind of retconned. Like Iron Man and Thor, they constantly are referring to S.H.I.E.L.D. as the something, 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 something. And they're like, you need to shorten that down. Well, But in the 90s, they were already calling it S.H.I.E.L.D.
Sure. I'll say this. I feel like that moment of his eye getting scratched out, it's one of those things that when it was just alluded to as something was much cooler than what we ended up seeing.
Yeah.
Much like, and you'll appreciate this, I think, when we finally saw the Kessel Run in Solo.
Yeah.
I had to make a Star Wars reference just that. For you. I'm doing this for that. You, Mike. But love when we finally saw the Kessel Run in Solo, I was like, oh, that's the thing. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay. It was the same with Nick Fury losing his eye. I was like, oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Oh, a cat scratched his eye. It was kind of a brush away moment. Like it just kind of happens. And then you're like, oh,
yeah.
Okay.
But otherwise, like I liked the cat.
Oh, I fucking love the cat. The cat. Truly was a gem.
Yeah. So
I'm very much waiting for Goose to have its own standalone movie. I am there for it. If anything, Goose deserves at least its own like
short.
Pixar short.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. How that isn't happening, hopefully it is. Kevin Feige, call me.
Make it so. Yeah.
I love the cat. Goose is everything.
He's a flirkin.
Yeah.
He's flirkin' wonderful is what he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Flirkin' wonderful. How late were you up thinking of that one?
Dude, I just thought of that.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, I don't know how familiar you are with the comic book lore.
I'm going to stop you right there. I'm not.
Okay.
Continue.
Does that include the X-Men?
Yes.
Okay.
It includes all the X people.
Okay. So you saw the X-Men movies though, right?
Yes.
You're familiar with the character
Rogue?
I'm
familiar with comic books when they are turned into movies.
Gotcha.
Much like I'm familiar with all books. Only when they're turned into movies.
Fair enough. So in the comic books, the character of Rogue, initially her only power is being able to touch people and like drain their energy. So
I touch people and drain their energy all the time.
Why do you think I'm avoiding your touch?
Usually for some money.
So anywho, so in the comic books, she gets her power to like fly and stuff like that from touching Captain Marvel. She takes the powers from Captain Marvel.
That's hot.
And maybe.
Yeah.
I wonder where she touched her.
I'm down.
Ooh, she was down. So
she touched her goose, if you know what I'm saying.
They were flirking. I'd be curious now that, you know, they're going to be rebooting the X-Men and putting them in the MCU and stuff like that. If there's any, I wonder if that storyline will make its way into there.
I don't know. We'll see.
I'd like to see that happen, to be honest with you. But
it'll be the first Marvel porn ever made.
I doubt that.
Quit rubbing yourself. That's disturbing. This is why this is only an audio podcast and why I refuse to have cameras. Mike touches himself very inappropriately.
You just do crazy things to me, Ryan.
Oh, God. Thank you for listening to the last episode of the Real Gay Movie Show. This has been something.
I didn't say nice things. I said crazy things.
Yep.
So let's go ahead and talk about then the big twist.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm happy to say I didn't see it coming. The twist of that the Kree were actually the bad guys and that the Skrull were the good guys.
Okay.
I kind of feel like I should have seen it coming because of Ronan being in there and talking with Jude Law's character and stuff, but so the leader of the Skrulls was played by Ben Mendelsohn.
Yes.
He has done so well playing bad guys in the last several movies that he's done that he was a very convincing bad guy to me in here. And I believed that he was the bad guy, but when they flipped the script, I didn't see it coming.
And I did enjoy that. And there was the point. So when he comes to the, friend's house in Louisiana,
yeah,
which I did appreciate the Louisiana reference. When he comes to her house, he's especially charming. Like, even when they're still portraying him as a bad guy, I was like,
right,
it's a shame he's a villain. I would love to root for him. And then very shortly after, I got to, and it was great. So I really liked his character. I thought he was really great in this. Yeah, he's not my Slay, but he was very close.
I liked his motivation. I mean, the motivation was believable, you know, with the protecting his family. And
but what a fun role. He got to both play a villain and this like super relatable hero.
Right, right.
All in the same movie. And he got to play like himself. He was himself a minute. And then he was also
in makeup.
The Green Goblin. It was great.
Yeah. The makeup for the Skrulls, for some reason,
bad. It looked like they had the special effects capabilities of the 1990s when they made this movie.
Well, I kind of thought they felt like Star Trek characters, like Star Trek aliens from the TV show.
Right?
Yeah. But
now, the makeup was not like pristine. It wasn't the most realistic, but you know, I kind of appreciated it.
Yeah,
it was fine.
So speaking of appreciating, did you appreciate the end, the mid-credit scene?
I always appreciate the ending.
Only if it's happy.
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I obviously we knew there was going to be some kind of tie-in. I liked seeing her then. Now, but she hasn't aged at all, you know, so wherever she's been.
Right. I do have questions about that.
I think
does
it has
she
to
never
do with,
age?
I think it has to do with time and space.
I would love if that's their actual explanation. Wait, did you not age? I think it has to do with time and space. I don't know. I'm just here to save the world.
I'm just here to kick Thanos' ass. But the very end credit scene with the cat.
Oh, I'll get to that later.
Okay. Well, should we go ahead and get on to our takes then?
I think the time mandates it.
Okay. What is your gayest take?
My gayest take. I said I was ready for this. I wasn't. My gayest take. Okay. So, Carol Danvers, aka Captain Marvel, has another identity, which is Veers. They call her Veers the entire movie, but then we find out the reason they call her Veers is because they have half of her dog tag because she's in the military, and that's not how you pronounce it. I am on Grindr enough to know it's pronounced verse. You're verse. And I feel like the only reason they didn't pronounce it like that was because of the gays. I feel like they knew we would all chuckle if they called her verse the whole movie. Captain Verse.
Captain
Verse. Which is my Grindr profile name.
Look it up. It's
Captain
true.
Captain Verse.
Captain Verse.
With extra berries.
Oh boy.
Yeah. That, we know that's not how that's pronounced. They added another E. That was stupid. You know that's why. You know that's why. That is not how you pronounce that. It's not Veers.
You know, maybe the umlaut or the line above the E.
Yeah, I'm a Veers top. How that works.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, what's your gayest take? Does it have to do with Jude Law? Because he's pretty.
He is pretty. But no, mine is that
Jude Law's in that Paul Rudd zone where like he's been consistently hot for decades now.
Yeah, I just haven't really liked his work lately.
I like a lot of his work.
I mean,
like from
I could work with him, but no.
Sorry, not to interrupt.
Yeah. So my gayest take is did you get the vibe at all that Auntie Carol and Maria Rambeau were totally a couple?
I was sorely disappointed when they weren't. Actually, when I first suspected they might be, I was like, are you shitting me? They're hiding the fact that this is the first gay Marvel hero?
I mean, come on.
I'm still not convinced they aren't.
Maria held on to her jacket and all of her personal things, and the girl called her Auntie Carol.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She had two mommies.
She had two mommies.
That was hot.
Yeah.
That was real hot. I'm really mad that they didn't make that more explicit.
Maybe it'll be in the sequel.
Maybe.
Shadiest take.
My shadiest take is that second post-credit scene.
Okay.
Because I sat there through all those credits looking at all those stupid fucking names.
To see a cat throw up
the Tesseract. Go fuck yourself, Marvel. That's some bullshit. If you're going to do that, truly, really make that the first post-credit scene and then give us the goods at the end. Don't give us an amazing post-credit scene and then literally nothing.
That kind of seems to be the way that they do it, though. They give the more important tie-in in midway.
But it makes me not want to stick around. It makes me not want to stick around. I want the funny first. And then, because if I'm going to stick around, I want to stick around for something worthwhile. I sat there through all those credits for 2 seconds of a cat fucking coughing up a blue orb for nothing. I guess it's technically not an orb because it's a cube. It's a cube, a blue cube for nothing.
Did you stick around for it the second time?
That's the longest I've waited to see pussy ever.
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 And of course it threw up.
And just as disappointing.
So I assume you didn't stick around and wait for it the second time?
I'm angry and bitter. Absolutely not. I didn't even tell. So I went with someone who hadn't seen the movie last night to see it for the second time. I didn't even tell him until after we left that there was a second post-credit scene because I didn't want to be like, but wait, I want to go see it. No. We're not doing that. I told him exactly what it was, too. I said, by the way, after we left, I said, by the way, there was a second post-credit scene. It was stupid. The cat threw up the Tesseract. That's it. The end.
Done. So mine is just that it's kind of outside the movie itself, but there were a lot of haters going on to Rotten Tomatoes and giving poor audience ratings to this movie before it had even come out. And apparently that became such an issue that Rotten Tomatoes actually changed their rules, saying that they're no longer allowing you to put an audience rating until the movie has been officially released.
Okay.
And I guess I think that that's fucked up. That people, without even seeing the movie, are just prejudging it and going out there and giving it poor scores. Even though the audience ratings really don't mean shit.
Poor scores than 7 years ago?
Yes. When this movie should have come out.
Yeah, touche.
Hey.
Good callback.
Thank you. All right. Who is your slay?
My slay, obviously, is Goose the Cat. I mean, truly, a tie slay.
Okay.
Partially Goose the Cat, because I just love Goose the Cat.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not a cat person. I'm a dog person. I don't usually like cats, but Goose won my heart over.
Oh.
Those tentacles. But Samuel L. Jackson, I thought he was great in this. Yeah. I thought it was a really great Nick Fury origin. I thought he did a really good job of playing the character a little different. Like, the character seemed younger from how he was playing him.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, is that
it wasn't just the digital makeup. It was his acting.
Right. There was a, I kind of said it earlier, but, an un... what's the word that I either used or I'm looking for? Just unjaded,
yes.
Nick Fury.
A less grizzled.
Yeah.
A less world-worn.
Right. He was almost my slay.
Okay.
I actually went with Ben Mendelsohn.
Okay.
I thought that his character had one of the best arcs in the movie.
He did.
And so I really appreciated that. And like I said earlier, it's just he's played so many good villains. He did a really good job of making you believe that he was actually the bad guy.
Yeah. He has a very evil quality about him.
Yeah. I mean,
I share that with him.
bringing Star Wars back up, he was the bad guy in Rogue One.
And Samuel L. Jackson was a good guy in the prequels.
Exactly. But he was also the bad guy in Ready Player One.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Cool.
Who is your no ma'am?
My no ma'am is Lashana Lynch.
Oh,
because she wasn't the lesbian lover I hoped she would be. You got to go full lesbian for me to give you some love. And she only went half lesbian, I feel like. Yeah. I feel like if you wanted to commit to being a lesbian, you should have committed to being a lesbian. And she should have. And Marvel should have. It's about time we had a lesbian superhero. We've already had a female superhero. Her name's Wonder Woman.
She's a lesbian, too.
No, she's from Lesbos.
Oh.
Difference.
So you keep saying that I don't like women, but it seems like you only like them if they're lesbians.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Was that not clear?
It is now.
Crystal. Okay, good.
My no ma'am was Annette Bening.
Aw.
I liked her as Mar-Vell or whatever her like Earth name was. But I found her scenes as the Supreme Intelligence to be some of the least interesting in the whole movie.
Okay. I like Annette Bening.
Well, I like her too outside of that role.
You thought I hated straight women.
Anyway, where would a drag queen have fit in?
Well, two places.
Okay.
One, as Supreme Intelligence.
There you go. Okay.
Because, I mean, who isn't the Supreme Intelligence if not a drag queen? But then I thought of something even better.
Okay.
So what if when the Skrulls landed on Earth, instead of landing at a beach, they landed at, like, say, a drag brunch?
Okay.
And assimilated as drag queens. And the whole time they're walking around, people are looking at them funny and they're like, oh, am I not a convincing enough human? But it's really because they're dressed, they're like assimilated as drag queens. I think that would have been great. I think there's a whole comedy that could happen where the Skrulls like invade Earth, but accidentally assimilate as drag queens instead of just run of the mill sexy surfers.
Yeah. I kind of went a similar, I thought that what if the old lady on the bus that was a Skrull was a drag queen. If that Skrull had,
don't hit me, I'm a lady. Right. I'm an old lady. Leave me alone.
I'm an old lady, just leave me alone.
Okay, played by Harvey Fierstein, right. Of course.
Of course. So what would you rate this movie?
I told you earlier that I started lower than this and then I bumped it up. So I'll tell you what I started with. Okay. I started with a 2.5.
All right.
Because I just had a lot of issues with the fact that this movie was trying to be too much. And at the end felt like a average to, honestly, I will say a below average Marvel movie. I still feel like it's around the middle of the pack. Probably even below that as far as Marvel movies go. But after seeing it a second time, I did enjoy it more. Just letting go of the expectations and really appreciating this movie for the performances and what it was. So I'm going to give it 3 reels.
All right.
I bumped it up. I do enjoy it. I loved it more the second time. I think it has a good rewatchability factor. Mm-hmm. I wish it had come out years ago and that we didn't have all these expectations that it was a bridge between Infinity War and Endgame.
Yeah.
I think that really hurts the movie because I feel like you don't get to appreciate it on its own as much as we got to appreciate Black Panther on its own. Black Panther didn't feel like a bridge between Civil War and Infinity War.
Yeah.
Even though it was.
It was, yeah.
So, yeah, that's why.
That's fair. I can't argue with you other than the fact that I gave it 3.5.
I can't, but I will.
I walked out of the movie on a high. Like I loved it right away.
Of all the weed you smoked in the middle of it. I told you this, quit bringing pot brownies to the movie theater, Mike.
Well, it was between that and the guy behind me was
smoking.
That's
why you enjoyed Alita Battle Angel so much.
Don't give away my secrets. I went back and looked at the reels that I gave to the superhero movies from last year.
Right. You never give below 3 to a superhero movie.
That's not true. I gave Aquaman and Venom both 2.5.
Right. And they were your top 10 of the year.
But so Infinity War, Black Panther, and Into the Spider-Verse, I gave 4 reels to.
Yes.
Deadpool 2, 3.5, and Ant-Man and the Wasp 3. I liked this better than Ant-Man and the Wasp. Okay. So I felt like it deserved a better grade. And my rewatchability with this is probably on par with Deadpool 2. So I felt 3.5 was the right score for me.
Good.
I'm only doing this because I know you like to then go back and say, well, do you remember what you gave to such and such movie? So
why'd you make me sound gayer? Why'd you say it like that?
I was doing you a favor.
Were you? I deeply appreciate you. You get 4 wheels. You get 4 wheels from me.
You know, people are going to listen to this episode and think you actually don't like me.
They listen to every episode and think that.
Now it's just confirmed. All right. So next week, we are talking about Captive State. Look it up. You can figure out what it's about.
Why don't you watch your own goddamn movies? Don't rely on us to tell you what to think, you sheeple. We're not even going to tell you what we think. We're just going to say, this is our episode on Captive State.
Honestly,
I went for a walk today.
It's because I don't know what the fuck it's about yet. So I just know we're going to watch it.
Captive State is actually what I put in my looking for on Grindr.
Okay.
I'm into some weird shit.
Apparently. All right, everybody. If you haven't already, become a real friend and follow us on Twitter.
If you're still able and willing.
And willing. At Real Gay. And Instagram at Real Gay Movie Show. Like our page on Facebook. Also, wherever you listen, iTunes, Stitcher, Google, or Spotify, please subscribe and give us some feedback. You can also send questions or comments to realgaymovieshow@gmail.com.
And as always, we issue our standard weekly apology.
That's it for this week. We're sorry, and you're welcome. Have a real gay day.